Welcome to Recovery Talk on AM 600 The Answer. Recovery Talk is brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. Listen today as our expert staff educates you and guides you in the areas of addictions, depression, and trauma so you can be better informed. To be a part of the program, call 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Now please welcome the Refuge Expert Staff Members. Once again, the Refuge Expert Staff Members.
Hello, and welcome to Recovery Talk. We're here every Sunday evening from 4 to 5 p.m. I'm Shay Kimbrough, Business Development Coordinator with the Refuge, a Healing Place, and your host for this evening's show. The world was shocked Tuesday when we learned of the suicide of comedian, actor, father, and philanthropist Robin Williams. To think that a man who shined so brightly and brought so much laughter to all of our lives could be suffering from severe depression is a hard dichotomy to reconcile. It is often assumed that those diagnosed with depression are always sad, unable to get out of bed, and unable to function in their daily lives. The truth is, many people suffering with depression are able to fake happiness or turn to substances to mask their condition. These masks may offer some relief momentarily, but the reality is that depression is a lifelong condition that needs to be treated and managed, much like a person diagnosed with cancer would manage their care. Tonight, we're talking about how stress and trauma can lead to depression and anxiety, and other ways our bodies and minds shut us off from experiencing the positive aspects of our lives and ourselves. We'll be taking your calls throughout the show at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Comments and questions are welcomed, and we hope to hear from you. Our first expert guest tonight is Annie Reed. Annie is an addiction specialist from Washington State and is currently finishing her master's in mental health counseling, psychology, and art therapy. She uses her own experience with PTSD, addiction, and recovery in a person-centered therapy approach, emphasizing cognitive and creative techniques that assist clients in coming home to themselves. A skilled group facilitator with advanced studies in East-West psychology and mindfulness, Annie brings 15 years of experience in the healing arts to her work. Annie, thank you for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Shay. It's really my privilege to be here and to share with you and listeners.
Awesome. As a counselor at the Refuge, you work a lot with clients suffering with addiction and mental health issues, as these two conditions often coexist. But the reality is many of us exhibit some of the characteristics of a mental health disorder as we experience stress or fatigue and may never be diagnosed as having a mental illness. Why is that?
Well, first, could I just say that I would just like to start with, we're going to be talking about Robin Williams, and people will be thinking about him as we talk about depression. And I just want to take a minute to just acknowledge and offer compassion for the suffering of his family and his children and his loved ones. Surviving a suicide of a loved one is one of the most difficult traumas that we treat. I have treated at the Refuge, so I just wanted to extend on behalf of our management and our staff and the listeners our prayers and compassion for the family.
Yes.
So, okay, Shay, back to your question about mental illness. Let's start with taking the fear out of that term, mental illness, shall we? Because that's important. I want to start with just saying that we really are all more similar than different, and all peoples of all cultures experience joy at things like the birth of our babies, grief at the loss of a loved one. We all fall in love. We all get angry. We all get irritated. We have times where we feel so anxious and afraid that we can't seem to do something that we really would love to do. And we all have good days and bad days. And sometimes we string together many, many good days, and sometimes we string together many, many bad days. And what I'd like to share is the idea that we can look at mental health and mental illness on a continuum, that we all progress along, we move backwards, we move forwards, we cycle in and out, moving from states of you know, mental wellness into periods of time where we would call mental illness. And like you shared in the segue, people do have some general ideas and general concepts, such as what you mentioned, that depression looks the same for everyone, and it always means that, say, the person can't get out of bed or won't do their hair or something like that, but that's not always true. Like you mentioned, people have amazing resilience and amazing coping skills, and like in Robin Williams, the way that he lived his life and the way that he fought his own battles was very, you know, much of a shock for many of us to understand what how deep his pain and suffering was. But for most of us, we cycle up and down along the continuum as we meet positive and negative events in our life, and we all have resiliency. We all have that ability to bounce back, to start a new day, and we all have compassion and empathy for ourselves and for others. That's part of our humanness, and all those things are very, very good. And, you know, I think for most of us, generally, if asked, we could say that we know what it feels like when we're doing well. For example, me, I could share that when I'm in a state of wellness, most of the time, most of the day, I feel pretty happy. I feel connected to others. I enjoy my day. I bounce back from stress. I notice positive things, like a silly look on my dog's face. I might appreciate something about living in Florida. And I look forward to, you know, opening my office door in the morning. And, of course, I will have the intention to take care of myself that day, at least, you know, just get up every morning saying, I'm going to do those exercises or eat well. And most of the time I feel loving and connected to my children, my husband. And I might, you know, I might have some annoyance or irritation, but it seems to pass. And generally, me, and like for others, and I'm sure for you too, when I'm in a state of wellness, I'm doing work that I love, and I feel a sense of meaning, and I look forward to the future. I may still have worries, but I also have thoughts that will follow along behind them saying, you know, it's going to be okay. Think about something else or, you know, get involved with something positive.
So and I also know that a lot about what it looks like, you know, on a good day. Can you tell us a little bit about what dysfunction may look like?
Yeah, dysfunction, again, it's a very individualized thing. For me, I know when I'm stressed or overwhelmed or experiencing difficulties, I'll start using some negative coping. I might eat too much, like the chocolate cake that they had in the nursing department at the refuge yesterday. When I come home, I might sleep too much. I might get into watching back-to-back episodes of The Walking Dead. I might not feel like talking to anyone.
Right.
That's me under stress, but I can but I can bounce back. But when we get into patterns of dysfunction, we lose that ability to bounce back, and that's what we see happened in Robin's life.
I'm going to stop you right there. We've got to take a quick break, Annie, but everyone stay with us. We'll hear more from Annie after the break, and later we'll be discussing how mental health disorders can lead to suicide and how depression and addiction led to the loss of Robin Williams. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Recovery Talk live right here on AM 600 and FM 100.3. The Answer. We'll be back in about 60 seconds.
The Refuge, a healing place, is a leading treatment program for men and women struggling with addictions, trauma, and co-occurring issues such as depression. The Refuge is nationally renowned for working with its clients to create real, long-term recovery. With their caring staff, you begin to unravel the underlying causes of your issues and gain the strength to accept and overcome them. They take a unique trauma-aware approach to treating addiction and co-occurring issues that emphasizes holistic treatment of the mind, body, and spirit. Their safe private campus is located an hour north of Orlando in Ocala, Florida, and features residential and outpatient treatment as well as drug detox. You can call them for a free confidential consultation, 866-612-6610, or visit their website, therefuge-ahealingplace.com. Welcome back to Recovery Talk on AM 600, The Answer, brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. To be a part of the show, call now, 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk. This is Shay Kimbrough with The Refuge, and tonight we're talking about the ways stress and trauma affect us both physically and mentally. Joining us is Annie Reed, therapist at The Refuge. As a reminder, we are taking calls at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Give us a call. Before we went to break, we were talking about mental health and how on some level we all experience periods of normalcy and what would be considered abnormal behaviors as we move along that continuum. It's no secret that today we as a society are busier than ever and under more and more stress. We work more, our children participate in more and more after-school activities. Pressure to perform at the highest level is at the forefront of our minds, and self-care seems to be a thing of the past. Now, Annie, before we went to break, we were talking about what true dysfunction may look like. How does all this busyness and stress affect us physically, and how does that affect the way we respond in our lives and our mental health?
Well, one of the things that we can recognize when we fall into levels of dysfunction is we begin to lose our ability to live life on life's terms. We begin to lose our ability to cope, and we don't seem to bounce back. So we lose meaning in work. We stop taking care of our bodies. We stop feeling love from others. We might stop feeling love towards others. And we're generally just start slipping away from life and what all the positive things in life that help us to bounce back. In our culture right now, we have going more and more, always plugged in, bombarded by stress and trauma and all of the different things in the world, and we really lose the ability to stop and slow down and cultivate some self-awareness and self-care, which helps us get our feet back on the ground.
Right. Earlier, you mentioned the concept of resiliency. So why is it that some of this stress and trauma that we experience in our everyday lives affects some of us more than others?
It's a difficult question to answer. Social scientists and psychologists study resilience, and particularly in children that have survived trauma, and it's a very individualized thing. There's a lot of factors that support resilience, such as tending to be more of a positive thinker, having social support, having enough basic resources, financial resources in your life, and having opportunity in your life. But resiliency is also something that we can cultivate, that we can teach ourselves to change our thinking patterns, to be more positive, to choose behaviors where we're interacting with others, where we're interacting with the positives in life, so those things can get through to us.
Okay, I recently read a blog post that you wrote where you discussed the topic of the window of tolerance and the notion that, you know, that we operate within this window of where we can function. Can you kind of explain that for our listeners?
Yeah, it's an academic idea that I read that I really fell in love with. If we think about the idea, I love to talk about the idea of coming home to ourselves. And in that home, we have a window. When we're doing well, we can have our window wide open, and we can tolerate and do well with a lot of things, a lot of positive emotion. Also, if sad things happen to us, if there's some trauma or loss, we can handle that. But what happens to our nervous systems if we have a lot of trauma, if we're using, say, drugs and alcohol or other negative coping skills, our nervous system starts to get burned out. So we can slowly start to turn things off, which means we'll start to be depressed, we'll start to feel numb and disconnected, we'll want to isolate, or our nervous system can turn all the switches on, where we fly into more of a mania, and we are overworking, overdoing, got to have more and more, running away so that we don't feel our feelings, and which is, you know, that state of coming home to yourself where we can really do heal.
So where we're allowing ourselves to feel our feelings as well.
Yes, yes. So that window of tolerance, when we're not doing well, when we're in a level of dysfunction, that window gets closed so that we're avoiding a lot of experience, we're avoiding ourselves, we're doing things to not feel, to not deal, to not cope. People get afraid to answer their phone. They just can't deal with the messages. Afraid to go to the mailbox because they can't deal with the things that are in the mailbox. Afraid to go back to school, or afraid to, you know, ask for that raise, or afraid to start an artistic career. And then we lose the ability also to receive all the positives, which help us revitalize and rejuvenate.
So I've heard you mention several times in our discussion the word trauma. And I know for most people, or for the general public, we view trauma as, a Vietnam veteran who's shell-shocked. We, you know, think about our boys and girls coming home from Afghanistan, or victims of violent crime. But in reality, trauma can be a lot more than that. Can you kind of touch on what trauma looks like in the everyday life?
Yes, certainly. Trauma is understood as something extraordinary that either happens cumulative over a long period of time, such as in our childhood, where we're not taken care of properly, where we're ignored, our needs aren't met, or where we're abused, or not given the time, attention, and care. Trauma can also be a one-time thing. It can be a horrific car accident. It can be being in an earthquake. Any experience where we feel a loss of complete control, the possibility that we're going to be killed or could be killed, or witness that state in somebody that we love, creates trauma. And trauma, the effects of trauma are cumulative. So if you have trauma when you're 3 to 5, perhaps a divorce, perhaps a dog bite, perhaps a car accident, and then you're in your 20s and something else happens, maybe you get robbed, and then when you're in your 30s, you know, something else happens, it's time to, you start to get the message where you're slipping into dysfunction and not coping well, not able to bounce back, and then it's time to do some work with professionals to unravel that and understand that and work on that, so that in the healing process, like what we do at the refuge, we clear that layer by layer. The clients work through the trauma to clear that, and then clear the triggers to the negative maladaptive coping patterns, and then they get the ability, the positive ability to start to feel the good things in life again. We start to feel positive things about ourselves. We start to love. We start to feel love. We start to want to take care of ourselves. And then life, just in and of itself, will start to heal us.
So, how can someone know or come to recognize that they may be experiencing the effects of a traumatic event or possibly even PTSD? How could they come to recognize that and know that they need to go get help from a professional?
Part of that is being able to have self-awareness and time to just sit with yourself and say, you know, how am I doing? I don't think I'm doing very well. I'm crying a lot. I feel so stressed out. I lost my job. I lost a relationship. And take a good, hard, honest look. The problem is that when we're suffering from a lot of trauma or slipping into depression or anxiety, it's very hard to come home to ourselves. It's very hard to sit with ourselves and get that awareness. Now, if we're lucky, we'll have a lot of loved ones in our lives caring workers, coworkers, or friends that can give us some feedback and say, hey, you know, what's going on? Do you need to talk to someone and make some, you know, suggestions for us? As things escalate, we can end up in the hospital. We can end up with DUIs. We can end up with, losing spouses or children that don't want to have anything else to do with us. And often that level of crisis is what drives someone to help. But there is a continuum, and if we stay aware and give ourselves time and shut off all of the busyness, we can kind of, you know, work with ourselves and get help and reach out before we go into those crises.
So as a society and in this culture, what are some things that we can all do to better take care of ourselves and our mental health and in our day-to-day lives, you know, in those moments where we can plug something into our busyness and take some time for ourselves?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question, and I think that Robin Williams' death is giving us all a moment for pause. And one of the things that going through a crisis like that does is it helps us to reflect. It helps us to look at meaning, look at our lives, pull our loved ones closer, participate in whatever faith or religion or spirituality that we have. To really care for ourselves, we have to unplug. We have to stop the doing. And we have to learn to just be able to be in the moment, to be with ourselves and check in and see how we're doing and what we're needing and practice those things that we know as a culture help make us better. Good food, taking time to take a walk, connecting with our loved ones. One of the things that has been really researched is the practice of gratitude, and that has been on the forefront of mental health research, and it's a very powerful practice. And they have found that the most efficient way to do your gratitude practice is to once a week just take time to be with yourself and write down five things that you are grateful for. It has an amazing impact on your physical and your mental wellness. And as we think about gratitude, that starts to open up our compassion for others that might not have what we have to be grateful for. And that's the road for all of us to heal.
Yeah, that is amazing. Can you elaborate a little on some of the work that you do at the Refuge personally? I know that you do a lot with the art program and you do a lot with the drumming, and talk about how you really help your clients come home to themselves and come back to themselves.
Well, at the Refuge, I, like many of the other counselors and therapists, we have a very person-centered approach. And at part of my job, I do get to run the Expressive Arts Therapy Program, which we're expanding. And these are wonderful tools for expressing pain and emotion that can't be expressed verbally. So clients will use painting, collaging, creating things to help work through those layers of trauma. We also just started a drumming for wellness program, which helps, and it's a best evidence-based practice that drumming helps lower blood pressure, it helps our heartbeats connect, and it helps the group connect. And these are all self-soothing and connecting practices. The Refuge has a very strong culture of the experiential therapies, which has been shown research-wise also, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years, to be so effective with PTSD and trauma, breath work, ropes, arts.
Well, that's beautiful. Annie, thank you so much for being with us this evening. When we come back from the break, we'll be speaking with Dr. Tom Antonek about depression, suicide, and the tragedy of the death of Robin Williams. Reminder, we'll be taking calls at 904-222-TALK. And that's 904-222-7233.
1-800-222-8255.
Always informative, keeping you connected, updated on the stories that matter. We've got you covered. AM 600 is the answer.
CBS News Update. I'm Harley Carnes. There's no argument about the cause of death of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Still, Attorney General Eric Holder has ordered a federal autopsy on the body so that the minority community might have more faith in the results. CBS's Bob Orr.
The Brown family, as we understand it, made a direct appeal to the Justice Department to say, please come in and look at this case for us. Attorney General Holder, in consultation with his staff, agreed that that was a good and prudent decision.
The shooting death by police in circumstances that are in conflict generated angry and violent protests and extraordinary efforts to calm the emotions. Highway Patrol Captain Ron Johnson.
I came in here today and I saw people cheering and people clapping, and this is what the media needs to put on TV.
The Justice Department is doing a civil rights probe. CBS News Update. I'm Harley Carnes.
I have a question. Who handles the plumbing, HVAC, industrial, carpentry, and welding for large and small commercial buildings?
That's easy. You're talking about mechanical contracting, and the leader in Florida is W.W. Gay. W.W. Gay has been a licensed contractor for over 50 years.
Well, what about energy management, and who turns off the lights and AC on the weekends?
That's called building control automation projects, and yes, 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 you name it, when it comes to commercial, industrial, and engineering, W.W. Gay self-performs all services. HVAC, plumbing, piping, welding, carpentry, general contracting, steel erection, concrete, and temperature control.
I thought I recognized the name. I see W.W. Gay trucks everywhere.
W.W. Gay's expertise includes successful project completion within the public, private, and military sectors. Check out the projects they've done and call the leader in Florida, the name we can trust, W.W. Gay Mechanical Contractor, Inc. Online at wwgmc.com or by phone at 904-388-2696.
AM 600 and FM 100.3. You want the latest traffic and weather? We've got the answer.
4:33 on your Sunday afternoon. AJ Davis with your traffic and weather together. Right now, there's an accident on the south side of Atlantic Boulevard at Hodges Boulevard near the Intercoastal. That's moved to the public's parking lot there. Be aware of that. Also, Arlington Expressway at University Boulevard, an earlier crash, should be in the clearing stages. There was an injury accident at I-95 northbound, mile marker 350. But no roadblock reported. Also, Emerson Street at Hunter Road, no roadblock there. And I-10 eastbound at Cassett Avenue, an accident with injuries, but no roadblock reported in that incident. Other than that, we're doing fairly well on this Sunday afternoon. We've seen lots of blue sky, but it officially is a partly sunny sky. About a 20% chance of evening storms, low about 75. We'll start out back to school tomorrow on Monday, mostly sunny and hot. About a 40% chance of afternoon storms with a high around 95. Right now, 92 degrees in Jacksonville. AM 600 and FM 100.3 is the answer.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk on AM 600, The Answer. Brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. To be a part of the show, call now, 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk. Again, I'm Shay Kimbrough, Business Development Coordinator at The Refuge, and we are now joined by Dr. Tom Antonek, psychologist at The Refuge and president of a nonprofit organization, Serenity Mission, that offers a full range of substance abuse services in the Tampa Bay area. As a reminder, we will be taking calls at 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255. Welcome, Dr. Antonek. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon, Shay. Thank you for having me.
At the top of the show, we mentioned the passing of Robin Williams and how his persona is certainly not what the general public has come to understand as depression. Reference has been made to Robin Williams' life being similar to the Smokey Robinson song, Tears of a Clown. Smiling in the public eye, but in my lonely room I cry the tears of a clown. It goes on to say, now if there's a smile on my face, it's only there to fool the public. How is it possible for a person like Robin Williams to be depressed, feeling sad and hopeless, yet present with such joy and laughter?
I would say, Shay, that it's possible in part because of the cultural stigma that still exists around depression, mental illness, addiction, for example, that it's a matter of willpower or thinking your way through it. I think part of the problem is also that there's a tiny bit of truth in that little analogy about tears of a clown, you know, putting on the persona, the external presentation, like all things are well. Because what happens is when we're depressed, it affects how we feel, how we think, our attitudes, our values, and how we act and behave. And if we actually act and behave as if we're not depressed, sometimes that actually helps minimize our depressive symptoms and stabilize us. And that's all under the umbrella of like a cognitive behavioral psychology. So there's some value to sometimes, you know, getting out of bed and getting dressed and going to work, even if you don't necessarily feel like it. How he was able to put on that persona and present as well as he did when he was so overcome and incapacitated by depression, I don't know specifically, but I think that speaks to it.
So if you act...
Go ahead.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. You go ahead. Go ahead, Shay.
I was going to say, so if acting as if we are not depressed can help improve our mental state, then that almost plays back into the why can't you just get over it. Can you speak more to how it really
Absolutely.
Does chemically affect us?
Absolutely. Most people do not experience clinical depression, but everyone does experience sadness. In fact, the National Institute of Mental Health, indicated that everyone occasionally feels sad or blue. However, it's usually short-lived and may pass in as short a period as a few days. But clinical depression, in comparison to that, is a constellation of many different symptoms, including feelings of sadness, hopelessness, helplessness, increased crying episodes, irritability, short fuse, concentration and motivational difficulties. For those individuals that have also have a physical component to their depression, such as, say, a fibromyalgia condition chronic back pain resulting from herniated discs, they may have a somatic preoccupation in their mind about their declining health condition, which exacerbates the depression, sleep disturbance, appetite disturbance, fatigue, social isolation, withdrawal, low self-esteem. And then for a portion of those that have depression, there's some ruminations about a suicidal ideation. So the difference is, let's say you and I are both clinically depressed. You may sleep all day, and when you're awake, you're not even hungry. You have a diminished appetite. I may not be able to sleep at all because I can't shut my mind off from ruminating over all the things that are causing me to feel hopeless, and then I self-medicate with comfort food and overeat. So when you take all of those symptoms together that make clinical depression, you know, more severe and debilitating than, say, your normal feelings of sadness and just, you know, facing life on life's terms, as Annie said earlier, it constitutes statistically and mathematically a whole extensive range of different symptoms that each individual can have. The problem is that the general public don't experience the severity that those who are diagnosed with major depression do experience, and that there's different forms of depression. Yeah, there's major depressive disorder, which is more persistent and many times is recurrent for people across their lifetime. There's something called persistent depressive disorder, which used to be called dysthymic disorder, which 50 years ago was actually called neurotic depression, which shows how far we've actually come and how we actually look at depression, because back in the earlier history of the development of psychiatry and mental psychology and mental health, people viewed depression as coming out of some neurotic dysfunction related to a more psychoanalytic trauma or unresolved conflict. Now we look at an even bipolar disorder, which is characterized by cycles of mood changes. We look at it more from a genetic, biological, environmental, and psychological factors. It's more of a biopsychosocial model of mental illness. So I believe that Robin Williams could have struggled with his depression for many, many years, which he apparently did, historically speaking, but he had some reprieve at times, perhaps, like many people do with, say, bipolar disorders or major depressive disorders recurrent. And as long as he was working a program of recovery, which apparently he was arduously doing for many years, that would probably contribute to his ability to sustain his ability to prevent the external world from seeing what's really going on inside of him. And the truth be told, you know, with all due respect to Mr. Williams, every one of us does that to some extent. We put on a persona and a face to our, we have our work presentation, we have our family presentation, we have our friend presentation. At the end of the day, when you're all alone by yourself in your bed looking up at the ceiling and there's just you and the universe and the God of your understanding, however you want to frame that, no one really knows exactly what's going on inside a person except that person themselves. And even that person many times can, quote, fool themselves and repress the etiology of the symptoms that contribute to their depression. I mean, that was a long answer. I don't know if...
That was a long answer, but that's a beautiful answer. Thank you. You know, I agree. You know, we oftentimes, I believe, fool ourselves in many of the things that we do. So,
right.
You know, you did speak briefly about, you know, the difference in, say, having the blues versus having depression. What are some, you know, very simple layman's terms, you know, things that we can look for in our loved ones and in ourselves that may key us into the fact that we are have more than just the blues or more than just a situational depression?
That's a great question. Look, I don't think you have to be a mental health counselor, a psychologist, or psychiatrist to be able to have an intuitive sense of what's kind of normal for the people you love in your life. You know, your children, your spouses, your siblings, your parents. Over time, as we have these intimate relationships with the people in our inner circle, we kind of get a sense of what's normal. And even if you can't eloquently articulate all the symptoms that I just did, because this is what I do for a living, you kind of have a sense that something's just not right. And that's the time when I think it's important to open up a dialogue. Let me first and foremost say that anyone who is listening to this who may have had a loved one take their life, you are not responsible for that tragic loss of the loved one. I mean, we cannot, and we mental health counselors also have to take, you know, it's very difficult for us, you know, because so many people that we work with don't get better and have relapses and take their lives. And it's very difficult to be a healthcare provider and to observe that. But I think the difference is just intuitively, if you sense that there's a little something off in the way they're expressing themselves, withdrawing, you know, a lack of interest in previously enjoyed activities. You know, I don't want to do sports anymore. I don't want to play music anymore. I don't want to go to the arts. I don't want to go to the park. I used to like hiking. The absence of activities that the individual used to like would be something to pay attention to. And then also anyone who you see an increase in self-medicating behavior with different kinds of substances, that's a kind of a red flag, because there's also a lot of comorbidity between addiction and mental illness.
Well, thank you. That was beautifully answered. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back to speak more about the tragic suicide of Robin Williams, and with Dr. Tomei tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Back to Recovery Talk in just about 60 seconds. If you'd like to call in today, remember those call-in numbers. 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. You're listening to Recovery Talk live on AM 600 and FM 100.3. The Answer.
The Refuge, a healing place, is a leading treatment program for men and women struggling with addictions, trauma, and co-occurring issues such as depression. The Refuge is nationally renowned for working with its clients to create real, long-term recovery. With their caring staff, you begin to unravel the underlying causes of your issues and gain the strength to accept and overcome them. They take a unique trauma-aware approach to treating addiction and co-occurring issues that emphasizes holistic treatment of the mind, body, and spirit. Their safe private campus is located an hour north of Orlando in Ocala, Florida, and features residential and outpatient treatment as well as drug detox. You can call them for a free confidential consultation, 866-612-6610, or visit their website, therefuge-ahealingplace.com. Welcome back to Recovery Talk on AM 600, The Answer, brought to you by The Refuge, a healing place. The Refuge is a leading treatment center for men and women struggling with trauma, depression, and addiction. To be a part of the show, call now, 904-222-TALK. That's 904-222-8255.
Welcome back to Recovery Talk. We are here with Dr. Tom Antonick, psychologist at The Refuge and president of Serenity Mission. Before the break, we were discussing the tragic suicide of Robin Williams and how depression and addiction may have played a major role in his death. Dr. Tom, it's no secret that Robin Williams also struggled openly with alcoholism and substance use, but many people may not know that he also struggled with workaholism and in 2009 had major heart surgery, which has been known to affect a person's cognitive function. What role do you think all of that could have played in his death?
A significant role. When you take a look at mental illness and addiction and a medical condition, one and one and one does not equal three. One and one and one equals about 10. It's as simple as I could make it. The exponential compounding effect of all of those conditions make the depression that much worse. In fact, specific medical conditions that increase the experience of depression are, research has indicated, heart disease, as you just indicated, stroke, cancer, HIV and AIDS, diabetes, and, as we just recently found out, Parkinson's disease. In fact, many of us know the courage of Michael J. Fox and all that he's done to bring awareness of Parkinson's and I'm having a blank here, Cassius Clay is no longer Cassius Clay. I'm going
Muhammad Ali.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Muhammad Ali. Those are two individuals that have put a face on this horrific disease. But the very first thing that many people with Parkinson's experience is depression. And on a little personal note, one of my younger brothers, who's 49 years old now, at 46 years of age, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. Very high-achieving individual, worked in law enforcement his whole life, was on search and rescue at 9/11 in New York and New Jersey, and also became a bodybuilder, was a professional bodybuilder, ranked 67th in the world at one time. And when he was, and he's suffered significant trauma in his life, including being a first responder at 9/11 and numerous other things, but I've never seen anything take him out as much as Parkinson's, and I'll just leave it at that. And I love my brother, and we have an open, reciprocally intimate relationship, and he's been much more engaging with me since being diagnosed. But my heart goes out to anyone who suffers from this disease, because it is kind of under the umbrella of dementias, and it is a chronic debilitating condition. And you look at certain people, like say, Muhammad Ali and Michael J. Fox, and you think, wow, they're doing well. They're handling it very well. You see a little bit of shakiness, but you think, well, that, you know, everybody should be doing it, you know, should be doing well, and that's just not the case, you know. The addiction side of it is, when you add addiction into the equation, especially with people that have, like, say, bipolar disorders and major depressive disorders, I've heard it said many times in the rooms of 12-step programs, that people don't necessarily, the difference between an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic, or a drug addict and somebody that may not be a drug addict, is that normal people just drink to feel good and enjoy their social activity and socialization with other people. Alcoholics and addicts don't drink or drug to feel good. They drink or drug to not feel. And one of the things that happens is, when you have a mental illness, it's you have all the feelings that every other human being has at different points in time, but they are flooded at the same time, and they're magnified. And then you have a way of self-medicating yourself into oblivion, so you get a little bit of a reprieve from the debilitating and incapacitating effect of the actual mental illness. You have something like Parkinson's thrown on that, and I guess, you know, I can only guess, because I don't know what was in the mind of Mr. Robbins, but apparently it was more than he could bear. And that's the tragedy. The tragedy is that even though he was loved by his family and by millions of people, myself included, who have followed his career, and he gave so much of himself. I mean, the relationship he had with Christopher Reeves is so endearing and touching. What he gave to that man while he was incapacitated and on his journey from his injury and life-changing injury to his death, Robin Williams played an active role in helping keep him emotionally solid per report that we read. And I believe that to be true, given that they had a relationship dating all the way back to Juilliard when they were students together. He was a loving, caring, wonderful man in a lot of ways. And I think that's the other thing that we need to realize, is that just because a person has mental illness or addiction doesn't mean they're an evil, bad person, doesn't mean they're a weak person. It means that they have a chronic medical condition, just like diabetes or hypertension, things like that. And we just can't bounce back, and especially when you have the comorbidity. The more problems you have with comorbidity, especially PTSD, we deal with a lot of PTSD at the refuge. And my job as a psychologist is to, I don't provide treatment like, say, God bless Annie. She's in the trenches, you know, working day to day, providing group therapy and individual therapy. I just evaluate people up front when they come in, and I do the testing, and I'm the one that basically assesses how severe the depression is, how severe the anxiety is, how comprehensive in scope the addiction is. And every client that I've ever evaluated at the refuge over the last 4 years, and it's been hundreds, has never just come in with, I'm just depressed or I'm just an alcoholic. Every single one of them have had very complicated conditions. So I think part of the problem for us working in the residential setting, such as the refuge, is we're getting some of the most traumatized individuals who have had the most chronic histories of abuse and addiction and mental illness in their lives. And it's an arduous, arduous task and journey, not only for the patient or the individual, but for all the family and for the treatment team working with them. Most individuals that may be listening to this or in the community, thank God, don't ever experience this. They don't have firsthand knowledge of this. So, and that's part of the reason why it's still hard and that it's stigmatized. It's hard for somebody who's never seen someone who has everything to live for and yet makes the choice or decision to commit suicide. It doesn't make sense to us, and it never will. And I've been reading some of the blogs, and one of the mental health counselors on the blogs about Mr. Williams' recent death said, quote, what I continue to learn as I work with those afflicted with addiction and mental illness is that sometimes people just don't get better. It's a depressing reality, but one that we must face. These illnesses are as deadly as cancer, diabetes, and even the Ebola virus. We can't blame this loss on a failure of the system. All we can blame it on is a deadly disease that is insidious. And I hate to send that message out because it seems so pessimistic, but in the recovery field, it says that some people just, you know, will die from this disease, the disease of addiction. So, and we also know that some people will die from mental illness. Put them together with a chronic debilitating medical condition like Parkinson's, and I guess from Mr. Williams' perspective, in that moment, it must have made sense. And I don't know. I don't know how else to address that.
And you spoke beautifully just now in that quote, and you said that, you know, he had everything to live for. And over the last few days, as I've read through the media, you look at this persona that he had to put on and how exhausting that also must have been for him, you know, to be this larger-than-life person and the funny man and, you know, this great character. And yet also know that every night when he lays down in bed and looks at the ceiling, like you said, that he is completely helpless. I mean, I would imagine that itself is a full-time job, which then adds to the stress of someone who is already dealing with an immense amount of stress.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's tragic because while I said all of us, Mr. Williams and the rest of us who suffer from mental illness, experience the same problems, and we try to come up with the same solution of putting on that persona. But one of his gifts was that he was an incredibly gifted and talented, extraordinarily exceptional actor. He had the capacity to flip the switch immediately and put this, you know, put this persona out there, whether it was on camera or off camera. But again, in your private life, when you're left alone to your own self and your own devices, and there's nobody watching, it's incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to fool yourself, because at the end of the day, you know. I mean, I sometimes, as a clinician and as a psychologist, sit, you know, in my own private thoughts and in my own meditations, I think, wow, you know, I really need to improve this and this area of my life, because if people really knew that I was thinking these thoughts or acting and behaving in this manner, there have been different points in my life which I'm not necessarily proud of, but I haven't necessarily acted or behaved with integrity. I haven't pursued mental health and well-being and wholeness in my own personal life at times. And Annie addressed some of that self-care that we all have to do, especially in the mental health field. It's critical that we take care of ourselves, because we're dealing with so much pain and suffering and toxicity that now we're looking in the medical field that PTSD can also be experienced by first responders, firefighters, mm-hmm. policemen, who have never been physically or sexually abused, but day in and day out and day in and day out exposed to such profound trauma, it wears down at their psychological resources, and eventually they are vulnerable to, you know, seeing people, seeing images, and having traumatic recall events.
So briefly, Dr. Taub, what can we do to get help? If we know someone or ourselves are contemplating suicide or feeling depressed, what resources are out there?
Okay. Well, I would say clearly, I believe in the intervention of least intrusion. Like I said, at the refuge, we deal with the most difficult, complicated cases. Of course, they do have an outpatient clinic where you can start on an outpatient basis. I would say in your community, find out, you know, where your mental health clinics are, where your clinicians are, the American Mental Health Counseling Association, the American Social Work Association, American Psychological Association. Look at the main associations and find people that you can go to that are credible. Or start with your church, your synagogue, you know, go to some religious leader, spiritual leader that, you know, that you feel maybe a little bit more comfortable with, and start there. You know, and also as a family member, keep the lines of communication open. Encourage the person to have an open dialogue. And if you see them, you know, removing themselves from the mainstream of society, then again, at the end of the day, you're not responsible, but you can pay attention and try and make it easier for them.
Well, thank you, Annie and Dr. Taub, for being with us tonight.
Thanks for tuning in today to Recovery Talk. Join our expert staff members from the Refuge, A Healing Place, next Sunday to talk about treatment for alcoholism, substance abuse, trauma, or depression. We're here to help. If you need help for yourself, a loved one, or a family member, you can call 866-612-6610, 866-612-6610.